a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to the Cue It Up podcast. I am excited to be joined again for the second time, the captain for the European Moscone Cup team, Alex Lely. How are you doing, Alex?
Hey, Nate. All good. Nice and anxiously awaiting the start of the cup in a couple of weeks.
Yes, and we are getting very close, less than 3 weeks now. How is the last second preparations coming together?
Well, good. Actually, not as intense as what we did before. You know, we're still meeting, it feels like the eye of the storm. It's a bit calmer. I'm not pushing as much, not contacting the guys as much. But we're having a meeting tomorrow night, and then I do some one-on-one work, and then we're all looking forward to meet up in the hotel. Once we were flown in.
And when you guys got to do the 2 week quarantine before, I would assume, right? So you guys are actually going to be flying out very soon.
No, we're there a week before.
Oh, a week before. Okay. Yeah. So we'll start with the first question, as you were the European Moscone Cup captain for 2008 and 2009 as well, winning one of those. But in this weird kind of COVID 2020 world, the preparation that you had in 2008 and 2009 has to be probably significantly different than it is today. Could you talk a little bit about how you prepared before during the 2008-2009 and how you prepare your team currently today?
Yeah, sure. The first two times that I captained is over 10 years ago. And firstly, the Moscone Cup wasn't as big as it is now. So I flew to Cambridge, I remember. I met Mark Gray, who was making his debut in the team. And we did some work, but it wasn't a lot. Actually, when we met in Malta, you know, that was it. And in 2009, it was even less, because the guys had a very busy schedule leading up to that Moscone Cup. They were flying to the US and then to Japan and then to Indonesia and then to Vegas for the Moscone. So we barely had spent time together. Now, the COVID crisis, you know, it limits, but it has also shown us the way to do online work. So just like many people working in offices who are now working at home, working through Zoom or Skype or Teams, Google Teams, we've done the same. So we have discovered that you don't need to meet to do work together, which we have done. And that's great. You know, that it has been great now, and it will be great for the future. So we have done sessions with all the players together, where I try to find like nice formats to work with the clock or to make them communicate more, and even just to have the experience of being in the same session and doing the same workout and telling someone he did well when he makes the decisive shot, for example. And I've been doing one-on-one work with the players, focusing on different elements of the game, depending on the player, where I feel some attention is due. So that which is fun, which is great, and it's always interesting to work with champions like they are. It's different, you know, from player to player. You have different communication, different things that they like, different approaches. But I have a lot. I'm experienced in that department. But this is a very special elite group, which makes it even more fulfilling.
Well, I think the emphasis on the elite group right there is, I got to echo that. I mean, there have been a lot of really, really, really great Moscone Cup teams throughout the year on both sides of the pond. But I struggle to find one that I can clearly pick above the group of players that you've assembled for this year. All five of the players, for whatever you think of Fargo, right? All five of the players are above an 800 Fargo. For comparison, the U.S. has one. And four of your players are above an 810. And two of your players are above an 820. Do you feel like you have one of the best teams ever assembled here? Or I guess what are your thoughts on the team that you have built pretty much?
Well, Carl and I, we've been lucky enough to have the chance, to pick four guys, and we had won through the qualifiers, being Vedder Gorst. That said, I would also have enjoyed very much having newbies on the team, people coming through the qualifiers, players that perhaps have been pushing for many years, but hopefully, in 2021, they'll get their shot to qualify for the team. But the team we have lined up now, talk about Fargo rating, talk about what they've done on the table. Individually, very good. And of course, we're very happy and we're confident, a strong team. But I want to emphasize that we want to see a team, and this is, the most, the unknown part. Like the unknown part, because Europe was a very strong team for the past 2 years. But USA, Team US, just operated better as a unit. So it's up to us to not think too much about Fargo rating and being strongest team on paper, because we need to gel and make things work. And making it work in those 4 days, the first 4 days of December, is not about anything that was done before. It's just about coming together in those 4 days and the build up in the days before and through all the days that we've already worked together. So a hell of a team, amazing players, a very young team. This is the future. Many proponents of the future of European pool. So as a neutral fan, or just as a fan, I would be very enthused to see Kachi and Gorst and Filler, and then Albin Ushan and Jason Shaw with them, but especially those three young guys, to see how they roll. We've seen Eklund Kachi. He did good, but he wasn't on a winning team. He's hungry, to get that taste of victory. Filler is just at home in the Matchroom Arena. He did well in the Moscone Cup. He won the US Open. And it's just a great team. And Vedder Gorst is making his debut. But I'm very confident that he will do well on the table and off the player. And he truly understands and breathes the concept of team. So that's all good there.
And so you had hinted once a little bit earlier on that the players did lose. You had a great team in Europe, and they did lose the last 2 years. Of course, you are adopting you have earned the captaincy of the Team Europe this year. Where do you think, without throwing previous coaches under the bus or anything like that, where do you think some of the shortcomings were in the last few years, and what is your plan to try to correct that going forward?
Well, we started with a clean slate, so there hasn't been any focus on approach in previous years. And we've stuck to what I believe is necessary for five individuals to come together and perform as a team. And a lot of it is about communication and sharing, trusting each other, being outspoken, being transparent. Of course, it's about pocketing balls and all those skills that they have. But in order to get in that arena, get at the table with as little noise as possible, they need to be on the same frequency. And for that, I believe it's important that we've done so to have joint sessions, talk, share, counter speak. You know, I appreciate it if one player says something and another player questions it.
For sure. Yeah, it's it definitely, and that's kind of where Europe has kind of fallen a little bit short, I think, in the last few years as well. It was the U.S. would get their kind of butts kicked in the singles, but they would win the doubles matches. And that was some of the questions. I think this is one of the things that pool lacks, I think, that other sports really has, is it kind of lacks the talking heads that go into the game to really discuss it at an in-depth level, where, you know, sports like football, basketball, rugby, and football, and I guess soccer in the U.S., football, and everywhere else in the world, they have a lot of people that really like to just talk about what happens. And I think that's one of the things that lacks in pool. But what I did hear from the quote-unquote talking heads on Facebook was the chemistry between the European players wasn't that of the U.S.'s. And the overwhelming reason for that why is the U.S. kind of picks the same four or five players every single year. They only really have a pool of 6 to 8 players every year that they can really choose from, where Europe theoretically could have, I mean, there, you could almost field 3 or 4 Moscone Cup teams that would be highly competitive. Do you think that that is an advantage that the U.S. has? I guess that they have to be tighter because they're constantly playing together every single year, where the turnover on the Europe might make it a little bit harder to build that chemistry?
Yeah, partly. You know, it's everyone's strength is his weakness and vice versa. So what you said about the States, yeah, definitely that will help. But it's also something you know, especially now working online, doing sessions where you don't need to meet in person. These are all things that we have worked on to make it better, Many of these players will be regular faces in the next 10, 12, 15 Moscone Cups. Not every year, but many times. So it's not just the building for this year, but it's building for the future. And then if you do your work right as an individual, you can cement your name in history of the Moscone Cup.
And that is definitely something I want to come back to later on in the interview. So we will put a pin in that one right there. But the next thing I would like to talk about is the press conference that you had when you had spoken about having your fourth player on. And we kind of got the look ahead as to what you're looking at for your fifth player. Your fifth player, or your fourth player, was Joshua, right? Was it Joshua?
Albin.
Albin, I was thinking Albin was your... Okay, so at the Albin press conference, you were talking about how you're looking for experience with your fifth player, and you wanted somebody who's going to be able to instantly come in and be able to form a team just by them being there. And everything in my head is screaming, Niels. He's going to pick Niels for his fifth one, of course. And that's part of the fun of doing these press conferences and asking you about what you're looking forward to, is we get to start speculating on who we think it's going to be. Of course, it turned out to be Eklanti Kachi. What kind of went through your mind in the last 2 weeks from picking your fourth to your fifth player that kind of settled you on Eklanti Kachi?
I think I was saying, like, in the lead up, in the build up to the last pick, is that it would be a choice between experience on the one hand and a, you know, very young, hot player. Yeah, and that was the dilemma that we had. Eklund is, you know, a super strong player, and he performed okay in his first two Moscone Cups. Maybe in a different context, in a different team, you know, it could have been different and he could have been the perfect player. Whatever it is, we feel he definitely has the game that fits right in there. He's an elite player and hitting the ball a bit better than Niels recently. So, and to counter that, it would be a choice for Niels because of his experience in so many years. And you have to make a choice, but this year I'm working together with Carl, so I'm having a vice captain, which gives us a bit more grip, a bit more grip on the team. They still need to perform out there on the table, but before the match, after the match, during one player's match, when the other player needs a bit of coaching or input or comfort or whatever, we're two. So that makes a difference too. So we have a young team. We don't have Niels on board, but we have Albin and we have Jason Shaw, but especially Albin has a very calming influence on the team. And he definitely has the seniority of leading that team. No. He's not leading the team, but he can be the calming influence. Because I don't want to. It's five guys, and we've spoken about this. Young or old, there is a time for everyone to show his leadership, and it won't be with one player.
I really like the way that you cleaned that up there. And I shouldn't say cleaned up there. You kind of caught yourself in the way that you wanted to say it. But I think that's a very different thing than what we've seen in the last year, especially from the U.S. side, where there's no question who leads the U.S. side. I mean, Shane is – I mean, his nickname is Captain America. He is a leader of the team, and he plays like it. I mean, he addresses himself like such. I like the idea of having – a team where you are a team and you're all peers and you're kind of playing together. That's kind of the atmosphere you wanted, was everybody is a peer and everybody is working together to solve, the problem of winning the Moscone Cup and bringing it back to Europe. You're all working together equally for that. That's kind of the atmosphere you're trying to build.
Yeah, but there will definitely be times when leadership must be shown. But the moment and the person will be varying. I mean, if it's a moment for Federer to stand up and tell his partner in a doubles match or tell someone else something like, no, I'm going to play the shot because he really feels it's the shot to play for him at that moment, or in some other situation for him to overrule a player in a discussion, that's perfectly fine. And the fact that other players are playing their 10th Moscone Cup and he's playing his first, or that another player is 10 years older, doesn't mean that much. I mean, they're all top sportsmen. They're all athletes. They all have a very strong work ethic. I don't see a reason to put one player above another. There's enough pressure out there, and I won't, let's share that together.
Yeah. So this kind of goes into the strategy of coach, how do I want to put this? It kind of goes into the strategy of how you want to put your players out there for this. So this is probably a question you probably won't want to answer, but I'll ask it anyways, and we can edit it out if nothing else. Fedor, of course, is going to be your rookie. Is there any sort of strategy that you and Carl have discussed about getting him out there right away and getting him settled in? Or is there been any discussion about maybe, putting him out there with Jason Shaw, maybe on the first kind of scotch and getting him settled in with a more calming presence, or maybe even an Albin, like you said, a nice calming presence to help him settle into the Moscone Cup a little bit easier?
Yeah, that's the alchemy of sports coaching, making the right direction, the right choice in that moment. And it's something we discuss. Yeah, and some players are better off thrown in by themselves. Other players do better if they're teaming up with someone. But that's for Carl and myself and the team. That's not something I can share. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeremy paid me $50 to ask that question. Trying to get an answer. Uh-huh. Totally just kidding. Okay. So we got to address the elephant in the room. What did you think of the most? Let me take a step back here. I think you can look at Team Europe, and because you guys had the flexibility to be able to kind of pick whoever you wanted, like you said, you had the four wild card picks. you kind of had the ability to build the team that you wanted. And that goes for both ways. So that goes with the U.S. as well. And there's really no question who four of the players are going to be year in and year out. Some people want to make an argument that Billy is still kind of maybe not a lock, but I think that that's a silly argument. I think Billy's a lock. I think Justin, Sky, and Shane are kind of a lock. And the pool world kind of got set ablaze for about 2 weeks when we saw the pick for the fifth player when it wasn't Tyler and it was Chris. I guess from a European's perspective, obviously being the coach, what did you think of that decision after it was made?
Well, Chris was on my radar. I know he's an up-and-coming player, and he's, you know, he probably deserves to be in there. I mean, yeah, deserves to be in there. I'm not saying he deserves it more than Tyler Steyer or someone else, but, you know, he's a strong player, and he will be carried by his teammates, I hope, for him. But, you know, he's the big unknown to us. And I think for them as well, how many international tournaments has he played? But it shouldn't matter to us, right? I don't want to talk about their player because it could just take any focus away of our game. So we'll see. And Tyler, this, you know, 2 years ago in London, he won that match against Niels, turned it around on day one. That was very good. Last year, he performed a little less. So we'll see. You know, Chris Robinson, in that sense, it's a good thing for him that we're not going to have big audiences like in Ali Pally, for example. But there's still going to be a lot of heat out there. I hope he enjoys the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And I sat with Chris Robinson last year at the Moscone Cup in Las Vegas, and I asked him a question at some point in time, when am I going to get to see you in this Moscone Cup? And he said, next year. So he held true to his promise, which is, I don't even necessarily think he absolutely believed it at that time, but he held his word, which is fun.
Yeah, good for him.
The next question I want to have is, it's Moscone Cup related in a sense, but really it's an Alex Lely question. I found out earlier before we started this that you actually do commentary for multiple sports, not just pool, but you do commentary for rugby. You're a very, very prevalent commentator in the world of pool. Of course, you are a player at the top level. I mean, you've won World Pool Masters. You've won, your resume is long. It's not just some kind of 1 or 2 year kind of fling. You were a very, very strong, top notch world player. We also have you now as a Moscone Cup captain. What does the future of Alex Lely look like? Is this going to be a 1 to 2 year kind of thing that we had with Johan, where he kind of straightened out Team USA and then he left, and we don't have to get into that, of course. But is it going to be just a couple years correcting the trajectory of Team Europe, or do you hope to be here for a little while?
Well, I hope to be here for a little while, but as it stands now, I would think a 3 year period is a good term. It's a good and healthy term in politics and in sports. I think it's healthy to not sit in the chair for too long. Doesn't serve anyone. But of course, you need to earn the right to stay. But I would like to think that in, you know, if I do well, if Carl and I do well, that at some point I'll say that it's been enough.
And then, do we have any insight as to what you would like to move on to then? Have you ever had any thought about coming back as a player? I know you do a lot of one. You like to play a lot of one pocket these days. A little bit less on rotation, if my understanding is correct. Do you have anything in mind that you want to start doing in the next few years?
Well, I was right before COVID, I was starting to get into like corporate trainings, communication training and MBTI and all that. And I found that I just enjoy teaching and being in front of a group. Now, corporate trainings tend to pay just a bit better than pool trainings. And I was enjoying that, so I would like to do more of that. The commentary I enjoy a lot. I do also the three cushion snooker, pool, rugby, sometimes boxing. I enjoy that. And, you know, I don't need to do a lot of pool training and coaching. I don't, well, frankly, there isn't enough money. So I enjoy working with low-level players. I enjoy working with elite players. But as I have 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, my work should be a little more about communication trainings. I was set to do 10 days of that in Texas. And then I think, okay, I'm going to Texas. I'm going to play one pocket. And in regard to playing, I need my children to, they're 13 and 16. So in a couple of years, if they're, you know, in 3-4 years, it will be okay for me to go on the road a little bit more, a little bit longer. So now I have a game here and then now and again, but I would like to go to the States like twice a year for 2-3 weeks, get my fix, and then go back home again.
You do like yourself some one pocket, and there really is not, there's not a huge market for it in Europe right now. I guess with the big matchup that we commentated together, the Tony Chohan and Joshua Filler, I actually thought that might have been a little bit of a catalyst to get some Europeans excited about it and maybe want to start doing some events, bigger events like we have at places like Buffalo's and Skinny Bob's in the U.S. Did you see something like that happening afterwards, or is it still kind of just a secondary, maybe even like a third or fourth style of game in Europe?
Well, it's picking up a little bit, but it's also in the U.S. It's also a niche tournament discipline. You know, it's a big game if we look at action games and all that. But as there's no action in Europe or hardly any, you know, that would feed the expansion of one pocket. But you know, it's getting there. It's better than nothing, and. Yeah, who knows? You know, if we're going to have a derby, when we're going to have a Derby City Classic again, I know Jason and Filler and probably Niels as well, and hopefully Darren Appleton more in the future. You know, they're close. They're not tier one and probably not tier two, but they're right behind it. So, you know, it takes time. It takes time, but it would be nice. It would be nice to be a part of that movement, you know, the movement of Europeans trying to get closer to the higher echelons of one pocket.
Yeah, and I think you can correct me if I'm wrong. There is one German player that you had mentioned last time that was a big one pocket player. That's a great player, but I honestly I'd never heard of him, I'm kind of blanking on his name now, but. We've seen Darren play a little bit. We obviously saw Joshua Filler play against Tony, and we know that you play some really, really good one pocket yourself. Do you see some of the other players, like, I guess I'll just throw out some names, like a Dennis Grabe or Alex Kazakis or any player like that?
Yeah, playing the ball? They'll try it, but the thing is, you really need to want it. Like, mm-hmm. 20 years ago when I was traveling and playing, I wanted it, but then I played against an American, just a nobody, and he wouldn't give me a shot for 90 minutes, and then I thought, okay, well, maybe it isn't for me. So what I see with guys that try to pick up the game, so what they learn is the break and some aggressive shots to turn the break around, etc., just the opening of the game, but so many elements that they don't get into. What was your question? Any others? Yeah, I see Grabe play quite a bit of one pocket. It's there, you know. But in order to do well in the States in a tournament, you need to have a higher psychological understanding of the game, of the end game, the middle game, playing the score. But first, people, you know, most important is that people enjoy playing it. But to play halfway decent one pocket, you need to sometimes have respect for the table and not attack a shot. And if people aren't in a tournament or aren't playing a money game, they won't respect the shot. So then it leads to all kind of crazy attacking and goofy shots. And that's what I see a bit in Europe.
Well,
I mean, you have to pay your dues in one pocket to tighten up your game. Otherwise, it's very difficult. So I said before, not even tier two, perhaps, in one pocket, but Federer beating Joe. And I mean, Federer has shown his skills in one pocket, but still, you know, there's still a big part of the game for him to develop.
Yeah. And
we need everything to open up, so we can get back to traveling and seeing all those beautiful games unfold.
Yeah. And one of the crazy parts about Tony and Josh is I think it was 24-21, the final score, and I think they played zero up-table games by the end of it, which is crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, Joshua showed us many great shots, as did Chohan, but we knew that from him. But, you know, pockets were a bit generous. Tony wasn't playing too tight. So on another occasion, it could be a different game.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I will get you out of here, but I got to ask you one more question. What's your prediction for the Moscone Cup this year?
We want to win.
That's actually more than I thought I'd get out of you for a question. Of course, that's
it's going to be a crazy edition. The 2020 is going to be historical. I'm so happy that Matchroom has pulled it off, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. And let's hope it's going to be a great show. Yep. Actually, there's no doubt.
If it's anything and like the Weber Cup, it should be a great one.
Yeah, I mean, I just did commentary on the Champion of Champions snooker event produced by Matchroom. And it looked great. I mean, the whole setup looked great. And Emily promised us the Moscone Cup is going to look even better. So, you know, we're prepared. We want to win. We're hungry. We want to set it right. And we hope all the fans enjoy it back home.
Yeah. Everybody get out there and get your DAZN memberships now. You are not going to want to miss it. We are less than 3 weeks away. Alex, I thank you very much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and till we meet again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Alex.
All right, bye-bye.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.